Ekatra Podcast Conversations, for the curious essential knowledge, simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Ekatra AI. Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today we're opening a book that, honestly, it really changes your relationship with yourself, especially how you look at your own mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
We're diving into Sigmund Freud's 1901 classic, The Psychopathology of Everyday Life.
Yeah, and this is such a key text because it takes all those things we just brush off, you know, slip of the tongue, forgetting someone's name, where did I put my keys? Mm-hmm. And Freud steps in and says, hang on, those aren't random. Those are actually psychological events. He had a term for them, parapraxis.
Parapraxis. And I think the really radical idea, the one that still hits hard today, is that Freud just completely challenges this whole idea of chance.
Totally.
We blame being tired or, oh, I'm just careless. But Freud's basically arguing that every single tiny error, every slip up, it's a clue.
It's a
little signpost pointing towards, well, deeper stuff, hidden motivations.
It really transforms that feeling of annoyance, you know, I did it again, into actual data, usable information about yourself. So you, the listener, suddenly get this access to self-knowledge just by paying attention to your own, well, blunders.
So, okay, let's talk about the guide here. Who was Sigmund Freud when he wrote this? What was going on?
Well, Freud, he was an Austrian neurologist born 1856, and of course the founder, the main architect, really, of psychoanalysis. And the timing is crucial here.
Yeah.
He wrote Psychopathology in 1901. That's immediately, like, right on the heels of his huge work, The Interpretation of Dreams, which came out in 1900.
Ah, okay. That connection matters. So he wasn't just dabbling. He's deep in these complex clinical cases, working with neurosis, interpreting dreams.
Exactly.
And yet he chooses to take that same intense analytical method and apply it to the most mundane things, the everyday stuff we all do.
That's what made it so unique, I think. He sort of pulled psychoanalysis out of the doctor's office and put it right into everyday life. Before him, psychology, these mechanisms, they were often seen as something for the sick, you know, the neurotic.
Right, not for normal people.
But Freud was showing what you could call it a kind of democratization of the unconscious. He demonstrated that the same psychological gears turning behind severe symptoms, they're also the ones causing your everyday slip-ups.
So it's not a different kind of mechanism, just maybe a different volume level.
Precisely, a difference in impact, not in kind. And that perspective made psychoanalytic ideas relevant to everyone. Suddenly, you don't need a complex dream to see the unconscious at work.
You just need to figure out why you accidentally called your new boss by your old boss's name.
Exactly that. Okay, so let's nail down the book's core argument. It sounds simple, but wow, the implications are huge.
Lay it on us.
Basically, those seemingly innocent everyday mistakes, they are meaningful. They're expressions of unconscious thoughts, desires, anxieties, conflicts. They are, like Freud suggested, little windows into the unconscious mind.
Windows. Okay. And how do these windows get opened? What's the mechanism?
He called it the compromise formation. Imagine your mind has these two forces pushing against each other. There's your conscious intention, what you fully intend to say or do.
Right, the plan.
And then there's this hidden thing, a repressed wish, maybe an anxiety, something you're pushing down, fighting against that plan.
So the mistake, the slip, it's like the result of that fight, a messy compromise.
Exactly. It's a disguise. The hidden thought gets to peek out, but only partially. Only in this kind of bungled way that your conscious mind can easily go, oops, silly me. And dismiss it.
It's like the unconscious letting off a little steam without causing a full explosion.
It's the path of least resistance for that repressed idea. And the whole book really is this systematic argument for what he called psychic determinism.
Which means
that every single mental act, every tiny gesture, every word, every forgotten name has a cause, a discoverable psychological cause. If you buy into Freud's view, there's no such thing as true mental randomness.
Wow. Okay, let's get into the specifics because the examples he uses are just so memorable, starting with the big one, forgetting names, especially his own analysis of forgetting the painter Signorelli's name.
Yes, this is classic Freud. He realized it wasn't just a blank, it was motivated. He'd been talking about death and sexuality, heavy topics triggered by news about a patient's suicide.
Uh-huh.
And his unconscious mind basically put up a roadblock. It didn't want to connect with that painful stuff, so it actively blocked the name Signorelli. And interestingly, what popped into his head instead were two other names.
Botticelli and Boltraffia.
Right. Related but different substitutions. It shows the mind actively defending itself, not just passively failing.
That active interference, that's key.
Yeah.
And it comes up again in the Aliquis case, right? This young guy forgetting a Latin word. word?
Yeah, aliquis. It means someone or anyone. Seems obscure. Why block that?
So why did he?
Well, digging into it, the forgetting was rooted in this intense personal anxiety he had about his girlfriend possibly being pregnant.
Wow. Okay. How does aliquis connect to that?
Through this complex chain of associations in his mind involving saints, relics, blood, the word aliquis ended up triggering this massive personal worry. The anxiety didn't just make him fuzzy-headed, it specifically latched onto that unrelated word and suppressed it to keep the anxiety buried.
That's incredible. The personal stress literally hijacks this random piece of academic knowledge.
Hmm.
So if memory can be actively messed with like that, what about our childhood memories? Are they safe?
Ah, well, that brings us neatly to screen memories. Freud's idea here is fascinating. These are often memories from childhood that feel really vivid, maybe strangely intense, but seem trivial, like remembering a particular pattern on a tablecloth or the color of a fence.
Yeah, things that don't seem important in themselves.
Exactly. Freud argued they are preserved not because they were important on their own, but because they act like a screen. They unconsciously cover up or camouflage something else that happened around the same time or place something more emotionally charged, maybe difficult or traumatic, that's been repressed.
Okay, so it's like keeping a bland postcard because it's hiding a really important, maybe painful letter behind it in the drawer.
That's a great analogy. It's camouflage for a hidden truth. And then, of course, we get the most famous type of parapraxis. The slip of the tongue, lapsus linguae.
The Freudian slip.
The classic. This is where the unconscious really breaks through, often quite spectacularly.
The politician example Freud uses is perfect. He means to say he's declaring the session open.
But instead, out comes closed. Freud would say that wasn't just tiredness or misspeaking. That slip was the truth. The emotional truth of his wish for the whole thing to be over just burst through the filter of his conscious professional intention.
His inner desire just couldn't be held back anymore.
Right. Now, moving beyond just words, Freud also looked at our actions or our inactions, like forgetting to do something, missing an appointment, forgetting to mail an important letter.
Guilty.
He'd argue that's often driven by an unconscious counterwill, a hidden resistance to whatever it is you're supposed to be doing.
The classic passive resistance move. You forget to pay that bill because deep down you kind of resent the person you owe.
Or you keep forgetting to schedule that meeting you're dreading. Your unconscious mind is basically sabotaging your conscious plan because it wants to avoid the unpleasantness.
Makes sense. And what about actual physical mistakes? Clumsiness.
Bungled actions, he called them. Dropping things, breaking things, repeatedly misplacing stuff. These aren't just accidents either. They can be symbolic expressions of hidden feelings.
Like the example of the person who kept accidentally breaking things that belonged to a relative.
Exactly. Consciously, maybe they're all smiles and politeness with this relative, but underneath there's resentment, hostility.
And that hostility finds an outlet by accidentally destroying the relative's favorite vase or something.
Precisely. The accident serves the hidden aggressive impulse while letting the person maintain their conscious image of being nice. It's very clever in a way.
Okay, so weaving all this together, there are some really big themes driving Freud's analysis here.
Definitely. Three stand out. First, as we touched on, psychic determinism. This foundational belief that nothing in the mind happens by chance. Every single mental event has a cause.
And the implication is, if we accept that, then even our tiniest mistakes, the ones we laugh off, they actually contain real information about our hidden motives. We have to take them seriously.
Mm-hmm. Second theme, the return of the repressed. Those thoughts, feelings, desires we push down because they're unacceptable, they don't just vanish, they keep their energy, Freud said, and they constantly push to get out.
And the slip, the mistake, the forgotten name, that's them returning.
Yes, but in disguise, in a form that's distorted enough to get past the censor. It really makes you wonder, doesn't it? What thoughts or feelings are you trying to keep locked away that might be leaking out in these little errors?
That's a challenging question. And the third theme.
The continuum between normal and neurotic. This was huge. Freud showed that the very same psychological processes that can create severe mental health symptoms are also creating these everyday slips in perfectly normal people.
So he blurred the lines.
Completely. It means that understanding these psychological mechanisms isn't just for therapists treating patients. It's relevant to every single one of us trying to understand ourselves and each other.
Freud really had a way with words too, didn't he? Some of his phrasing is just so potent.
Oh, absolutely. Very memorable. Think about this one. The forgetting of names is often accompanied by a false recollection.
Right. It drives home that forgetting isn't just passive decay. It's an active process. Your mind is busy substituting something else, something connected unconsciously.
Yeah, it's not a blank screen, it's a rewrite. And then there's this, which is basically the guiding rule for psychoanalysis. There are no insignificant details in the manifestations of the unconscious.
Meaning you can't ignore the small stuff. Every little slip, every odd detail in a story someone tells, it's all potential data.
Yeah.
It all means something.
You have to pay attention to everything.
Right.
And maybe the most vivid one, capturing that struggle to keep things hidden. If his lips are silent, he chatters with his fingertips. Betrayal oozes out of him at every pore.
Wow. That paints a picture. The idea that the unconscious truth will find a way out somehow. You can't fully suppress it.
It's relentless.
Yeah.
So, okay, bringing this back to everyday life, how can we actually use these insights? We're not all going to become psychoanalysts, right?
No, but the number one application has to be personal self-analysis.
Mm.
Just starting to notice your own patterns. Like, next time you accidentally forget something important, or you keep misplacing that gift from Aunt Mildred, or you make that same slip of the tongue again, pause. Don't just brush it off. Ask yourself, okay, what might be going on underneath here? What hidden feeling or resistance could be driving this?
It's about becoming a bit of a detective about your own behavior, and that extends to relationships too, listening differently.
How so?
Well, when a friend or your partner makes a slip, instead of just correcting them or laughing it off, maybe listen with what Freud called that third ear. Try to hear the potential emotional truth behind the error.
So if they say the opposite of what they mean, maybe there's a real wish or anxiety peeking through.
Exactly. It can foster a huge amount of empathy and deeper understanding rather than just focusing on the surface mistake.
And I can see this being really useful in a professional insight context, too, like if you're managing people.
Sure. If someone on your team keeps making the same kind of error on a particular task, maybe it's not just carelessness or lack of skill.
It could be passive resistance, or maybe anxiety about that specific task.
Right. And recognizing that shifts the conversation from blame or retraining to understanding the underlying motivation. Is there something about the task they resent? Are they feeling overwhelmed? It leads to much better management, potentially.
So wrapping this up, the really big takeaway here feels like Freud just completely reframed what it means to make a mistake.
He absolutely did. He showed us this incredibly active, complex world buzzing away just beneath the surface of our conscious awareness. And he turned the everyday mistake, the annoyance, into, well, he called dreams the royal road to the unconscious. But maybe these slips are like the handy side streets.
Yeah, the accessible pathways. The book basically forces you, or invites you maybe, to stop seeing your failures as just flaws. They're not bugs, they're features, they're clues.
Clues from your own mind.
Your mind is this symbolic engine, and when it messes up, it's actually handing you pieces of the instruction manual. It's like the ultimate invitation to explore your own inner world.
So the challenge to everyone listening is, don't look at your next mistake as just bad luck or stupidity. Look at it as a message, something your deeper self might be trying to tell you.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Katra Foundation.